This should be a mini creep. We rewatched Jersey Shore.
She's too young for you, bro.
So my favorite, I didn't realize the word creep and like creepin' was such like a verb back then. And all the guys like, we're going out to the club, we're gonna go creepin'. And like really freaks it, like,
wait, what does that mean? What does
like
it
going
mean?
To hit on girls. Like Pauly D comes back, he's like, Ronnie, let's go creep on some girls.
So like, they're just like acknowledging the fact that they're being creepy.
I know.
Welcome to another episode of True Crime Creepers, where we talk about all the real life creeps, from serial killers to con artists. I'm Kristen, the true crime fanatic who loves to tell these stories.
And I'm Mogab, the true crime newbie who hasn't heard any of them. Why do I always whip my head around?
I don't. It's like you're doing your entrance.
It's like the inflection that I need.
The people can't see, but when we do the intro, Mogab like steps away from the mic, turns her head, and then when it's her turn, she like whips her head to the mic. So there's always this like long pause that I have to edit out.
Oh wait, really?
I'm just kidding. You keep flipping that head.
Listen, you do know what you want. Not a crime.
What?
Us. We're going to Taylor Swift.
We are going to Taylor. Unfortunately, not together.
Yeah, I realize that. But listen, gotta get what you can get, you know?
Truly, truly. So we are going to the show in Arlington. So if anybody's going to be at the Taylor Swift show in Arlington, let me know. We could do a little creepers meetup.
I'm so excited. I'm going to like cry. I'm going to faint. I'm going to scream. I'm going to like pass out. It's going to be a whole situation. I'm very excited about it.
I have made a playlist of the set list that I will be listening to on repeat for the next 12 days because we are T-minus 12 days to Taylor.
I thought about that and I am going to do the exact opposite.
You're not going to look at the set list?
Well, I
want to sing along and know every word.
Well, I already looked at it and I think I will know every word, but I want to kind of like, I was telling Russell this. I was like, I kind of want to like not know what's coming, you know? And he was like, right, let her tell the story. Don't try and tell it for her. And I was like, okay. All right. I see you.
See, and I want to make sure I don't miss anything. So I want to know what to watch for.
Yeah. There's two different types of people. So maybe we should compare notes, you know, at the end.
Yeah.
Well, enough Taylor talk, I guess. We could go on for days.
Yeah. Before we get into this episode, let's talk about the Patreon.
Let's.
Because it's there and we have one. You can join for $5 over at the Patreon. And at the $5 level, you get an extra bonus episode every month. And you also get a shout out on the podcast. And then at the $7 level, you get all of that. Plus, you get two extra like mini episodes every month. And you get a card signed by Mogab and I with a sticker. You can also go to the $10 level where you get all of that plus the episodes ad-free and a discount on merch.
Yeah, you should go sign
up. So head on over to patreon.com/truecrimecreepers if you are interested in that.
People should definitely sign up. The content is chef's kiss. The other night I couldn't sleep, so I put on our Patreon feed, start with the mini creeps, the very beginning. And I was cracking up at like 3 a.m. at myself. My own earbud. And I was like, this is fun. This is a fun time.
Okay, so let's get into this week's episode. This is one that has been on my list for a long time. It's probably one that most people have heard of, but there's just certain things about this case that have really stuck with me ever since the first time I heard about it. So I am so excited to tell you all about it. We're in Boston, Massachusetts for this one. Now, this was surprising to me. I learned this in my research, but Boston is one of the safest large cities in this country, which...
Get out of here!
It just kind of surprised me. I just kind of feel like Boston has like that reputation, but it's very safe. Boston and New
Big
York...
Big reputation, huh?
Oh, okay. This is going to be the Taylor heavy
episode. My bad.
They have these reputations of being like more dangerous and seedy, but they're really not. In fact, New York was ranked 4th on a list of safest large cities in the U.S., and Boston came in at 15th on the list, so Austin was 19th. Anyway, April 14th, 2009, it was a Tuesday, less than a week before the Boston Marathon, which brings over 30,000 people to the city. Hotels in the area were all getting ready for this influx of travelers, including the Boston Marriott in Copley Place. This is a 4-star hotel where a basic room is going to cost around $300 to $400 a night. And during the marathon, I checked and it's like $800 a night. So it's like a nice hotel. This isn't the type of hotel where you'd expect anything dangerous or bad to happen.
So no water beds.
Only in their nicest rooms.
Okay.
But that night, several people staying on the 20th floor of the hotel heard three loud bangs and high-pitched screams just after 10 o'clock that night. Two of the hotel guests looked outside their hotel door and saw a woman lying on the floor in the doorway of room 2034. And they immediately called the front desk to report it. Security guard Alan McCarthy ran up to the 20th floor and saw this woman lying there on the floor in just her underwear. Mm. He knelt down beside the woman and asked if she was okay, but she didn't respond. And he noticed that there was a plastic, they called it a plastic garbage bag tie, but it was like a flex cuff, like a zip tie on her right wrist. Her hair was covering her face, so he moved her hair out of the way and saw that her face was covered in blood. He immediately called for police and an ambulance, and the woman was rushed to the hospital. But within minutes of arriving there, she was declared dead. She had multiple skull fractures from blunt force trauma on the back of her head, and she'd also been shot three times, once in the stomach, once in the chest, and once directly in the heart. She also had a lot of defensive injuries and bruises on her wrists, showing that she had fought for her life. She'd even been able to scratch her attacker, which meant they had the DNA. Sergeant Detective Daniel Duff with the Boston Police Department was one of the first detectives assigned to the case. And he said that this was the first call he'd ever gotten to the Marriott Copley Place because these types of incidents just never happened there. When he arrived on the scene, he got the call from the Boston Medical Center where the victim had been taken to tell him that she had been pronounced dead. And so Detective Duff now knew that he was investigating a homicide. The crime scene showed that it was a very violent assault. They knew it had been a shooting. There were shell casings found on the floor. There was blood splatter all over the walls. But the first thing that they needed to do was to identify their victim, which proved simple enough. While they were processing the hotel room, they found the woman's wallet, which contained her ID cards. It was 25-year-old Julissa Brissman. She was an aspiring actress and a student in New York, 200 miles away from Boston. Julissa had been studying to be a substance abuse counselor. She had struggled with substance abuse, especially alcohol, which had caused her to make some pretty huge mistakes in her life. But she had worked really hard to overcome her addiction. She completely stopped drinking. She quit her bartending job because being around that temptation was too much for her, so she quit that job. She stopped going out to parties with her friends. She would decline every time she was invited and regularly attended AA meetings.
I've heard this story before.
Really?
Oh. No. No, I think I'm thinking of Serena from Gossip Girl. Just kidding. Sorry.
Oh.
Oh my God. I was like, I think I know this. But
just kidding. I'm thinking of Serena Vanderwoodson.
Yeah, my bad. Keep going.
Julissa even got a tattoo on her ankle of the date her sobriety began, which coincidentally was April 14th, 2007, exactly 2 years to the day before she was murdered.
Okay.
That's really just a coincidence, but it's wild. She knew that she could help people that were going through the same thing that she had gone through. That's why she wanted to be a substance abuse counselor. And Julissa's friends also said that she was a fighter. She was tough and strong, but also super fun and deeply caring. She was also really close with her family, especially her younger sister, Melissa, who was 10 years younger and still in high school. And Julissa would regularly come home to visit. Also, Julissa had a little dog named Coco Chanel.
No. Yeah. Stop it.
And it's spelled right. She spelled it right. For those that don't know, Mogab's mom has a little dog named Coco Channel because she spelled it wrong.
Correct.
Yeah. And Julissa would always say that she loved Coco more than all of her boyfriends combined.
Sounds like my mom as well.
Julissa's family were really hardworking people, but they didn't have a lot of spare money. So Julissa had worked several jobs while she was putting herself through school. She'd bartended, like I said. She sold shoes. She worked at a tanning salon, but none of them paid her enough money to support herself living in New York, where she was also pursuing her acting dreams. So she started looking into more lucrative ways to make money. That's when she started giving massages. She put up ads on the erotic services section of Craigslist and started taking clients. And this really wasn't code for escort service. She made sure to include the phrase "no full service" in the ads, but they were sensual massages, and she had once worked for a famous madam in New York named Kristen Davis.
Is that part of Craigslist, like, still a thing? Like, you can just...
I have not checked Craigslist recently for their erotic services section.
Okay.
I'm not sure. It was in 2009 for sure, but I couldn't tell you. I would assume so. I would assume so. Jalissa had set up a security system of sorts with this friend, Mary Beth Simons, where the number listed on the Craigslist ads would go to Mary Beth's phone. And so Mary Beth would basically make the appointments for Jalissa, and then she'd text her like when the person was on his way, and Jalissa would then text her back when the man left so that Mary Beth knew everything was good to go. It wasn't the best security system in the world, but it was something. Yeah, it was something. So at least Mary Beth would, like, know who she was seeing. And it's more like it's good for if something happened. It's not really good to prevent anything, which not is unfortunate.
It's like sharing your location, you know?
I mean, kind of.
Is Jalissa paying for this expensive hotel room to, like, do this?
Yeah, she's paying for the room, but she has, like, clients set all day.
So it's, like, boom, care of itself. Okay.
She kind of, like, travels to different cities. I don't know how much traveling she does. I know others in this story, like, would travel from city to city and just kind of put up an ad on Craigslist and are like, hey, I'm in town, you know, come book an appointment to get a massage or whatever. Oh. And so they would just, like, set up these massages, like, every 2 hours, you know, all day.
I need to start doing that because it's tough to get into massage envy and they're pissing me off. So I feel like I could just.
I don't think you want to get a massage from somebody on Craigslist. These are not licensed massage therapists. Like, she didn't have. She had, I think, like, taken a class or taken some classes on how to do it, but she wasn't, like, a licensed massage therapist.
So people aren't booking her for her technique necessarily.
No.
Gotcha.
No. Investigators noted that Jalissa's hotel room at the Marriott looked like it had been set up for a massage. So investigators were thinking that this person that killed her must have been a client coming to meet her. Based on where the blood was in the room, they surmised that the man had come to her door and that almost immediately there was some kind of confrontation. Jalissa had one flex cuff on her wrist. So they're thinking that as soon as he tried to tie her up, she'd, like, started to fight him. And people in adjacent rooms had heard her scream and then heard the gun go off. So detectives were thinking that, like, when she'd started to put up this fight, he'd killed her and then ran off as soon as possible. Investigators wanted to make sure that they were able to contact Jalissa's family first before this, like, blew up in the news. And so they had Jalissa's address in New York City, and it was obviously ideal to make this kind of notification in person. But when NYPD detectives went there, they discovered that the family had moved since then, so they no longer lived at that address. But investigators in Boston were able to get her mom's phone number out of Jalissa's phone, so they had to call her. Mm-hmm. And I know. And Jalissa's mother was from the Dominican Republic, and so her English wasn't really that great, so she didn't understand what the detective was trying to say. So she called in Melissa, Jalissa's, like, high school age sister, to come in and, like, translate on this phone call. And so Detective Duff had to tell Melissa what had happened. And he said it was just heartbreaking for him to have to break the news to them like this. And at first, Melissa didn't understand. She was like, is Jalissa in the hospital or is she in jail? Like, what? Why are you calling me? Like, what happened? But then Detective Duff told her that she had died. And Melissa and her mother were her mother's name is Carmen, by the way. They were just in complete shock. And now they had to figure out how to take the train into Boston to identify Jalissa's body. Meanwhile, Detective Duff is continuing on with his investigation into this murder. He got information from detectives from another district in Boston about a very similar incident that had happened 4 days before Jalissa's murder, less than a quarter mile away at the Westin Hotel at Copley Place. It's, like, right next door almost, like a quarter mile away. Trisha Leffler was a masseuse out of Las Vegas who would travel to different cities and post ads on Craigslist. And people would respond to the ads and they would come and meet her at whatever hotel she was staying at, which, again, in Boston was the Westin. On April 10th, she'd had an appointment with this man to come to her hotel room at the Westin for an hour massage. Like Jalissa, this appointment was late at night. It was actually her last appointment of the night, same as with Jalissa. She'd met him by the elevators and taken him up to her room, but as soon as she closed the door and turned around, the man had a gun pulled and pointed it at her. Trisha said she started shaking. Her heart was beating really fast. She didn't know what to do. This man told her to lay down, so she did, and he zip-tied her hands behind her back. And Trisha told him that he didn't have to tie her up. She'd give him whatever he wanted, but he just told her that if she was quiet, no harm would come to her. And then he put on black leather gloves and asked her where her money was. She told him that her purse was in the entertainment center, and he got it out and he took all the cash that she had in there. And he then asked her for the PIN numbers for her credit cards. And Trisha said her adrenaline was pumping too fast for her to think of a lie, so she just told him her PIN numbers. But then Trisha asked him if he could please leave her ID, like her driver's license, so that she could get home back to Las Vegas. And he took her ID out and like studied it, like he was trying to memorize her address or something. It was weird. And then he like threw the license down on the bed for her. Nice guy that he was. He also left one of the prepaid credit cards she had because she asked him to leave her one of those. They were empty, but she was like, at least somebody could put money onto it for me and I could still get home. So he left her one of those too. Really nice guy. Very considerate, obviously.
Stand up.
Yeah, stand up guy. He also took her camera. He picked up her phone and like started going through it. He erased his number out of the call log. And he then took the battery out of the back of her phone because we were in 2009. And he threw it behind. Yeah. He threw the battery like behind the entertainment center in the hotel room so that she wouldn't be able to get to it right away. And he cut the phone lines to the phone in the room so she couldn't call for help right away either.
Okay.
Then he kind of just took his time looking around the room and he grabbed a pair of her underwear from her suitcase and put it in his pocket. Okay. And then he looked in the safe in the room, which was empty. She hadn't put anything in the safe. And he then decided that he needed to tie her to something so he could have more time to get away. And he settled on tying her to the bathroom door, which I'm not sure how you tie someone to the door. I cannot visualize this. I don't know if it was like the doorknob.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. He put three pieces of duct tape over her mouth. And at this point, for whatever reason, he'd taken the gloves off because he's clearly a criminal mastermind.
Yeah.
So he's like taping her mouth with ungloved hands. And then he just left. It only took Trish like a minute after he left for her to twist herself out of the ties and then take the tape off of her mouth. And she ran to the room next door, careful to make sure that he wasn't like still in the hallway that he'd left, and asked to use their phone to call security because she'd just been robbed.
Ugh, I don't know if I'm answering the door. You know, you're in a hotel and then like
I might just call security.
Like for them.
I'd probably
like,
just call security.
Do you like want to do the right thing? You know?
You will want to protect yourself too, though. Yeah. It seemed very similar to Jalissa's murder, except for two things. One, he left Trisha alive, obviously. Yeah. Biggest difference. And two, he hadn't robbed Jalissa. There was some cash in an envelope found in one of the drawers in Jalissa's room. But investigators think that that's because Jalissa didn't react like Trisha did. Trisha's reaction was to like go along with whatever he said in the hopes that he wouldn't hurt her. And Jalissa's reaction was to fight like hell in the hopes that she could get away from him. When Jalissa fought back, the man shot her and then ran away as fast as he could, which is why he left all the cash behind. That's like the theory they're working with anyway. And it was enough to link the two cases to each other.
Do we know if he had a gun with Trisha? Like, did you say that? Or do we just not know?
Yeah, he had pulled a gun on. Yeah, he had pulled a gun on her. It. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So we know for sure it's the same guy. Or are you going to get me there later?
I'll get you there later. It is the same guy. And I think they're pretty certain because of like this very specific pattern. Like it's almost the exact same thing. It's 4 days later. It's in a hotel right next door.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty certain that it it seems like the same guy. They need to do a little bit more due diligence before they like say for sure. But yeah, they're pretty certain.
Isn't it crazy that like this kind of stuff can go on? Like there's this whole like webs, you know, things on like a whole thing on Craigslist where people are going and booking this, like this whole service that like we don't even know exists, you know, that's like happening. Yeah.
Crime scene investigators had been able to get a fingerprint off of one of the zip ties that was used to tie up Trisha, but when they ran it through their system, they didn't get a match. And this meant that whoever had done this had never been arrested before, but they kept the print on file, of course. Trisha was also able to give detectives a detailed description of her attacker. He was a white man with blonde hair, described as college-looking, clean-cut. To really paint you a picture here, in the Lifetime movie, because there is a Lifetime movie about this, guess who played him? You'll actually know who it is.
Oh.
Evan Chambers from Greek.
No way.
Yeah, Jake McDormand. So that's what you're picturing. Tall,
man,
white,
just
clean cut, fratty.
Is he just type slash tight cast? Remember that whole discussion where he's just like always the like white bro douchebag guy?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of the time. Yes.
Okay.
Trisha said he wasn't dressed particularly well, but he didn't look sloppy or anything or shabby. He was tall and he was wearing a black leather jacket and a baseball cap, a black baseball cap.
Mm.
And Trisha wasn't the only witness police had. There were also surveillance cameras.
I was just about
at
to
the
say,
hotels.
In the hall. I mean, not in the rooms, I know, but.
No. And unfortunately, also none on the floors, like none in the hallways that either of the women were staying at.
Why
but
is
there
that?
Were
That's been in another case, too.
Probably privacy.
Like I would think that they're in the hallway. I know, but I mean, like, you shouldn't be doing anything in the hallway. Do it in your room. I don't know. I'm never assuming in a public place that the hallways aren't. Listen, I know people.
Monitored.
Yeah. I'm just always assuming if I'm in a public place, the hallway is monitored. Like, it's
I don't
in the
know
elevators.
Why they don't put.
They got cameras in the elevators.
They do at some places. I don't think this place had cameras in the elevators. They might have. I didn't hear about any cameras in the elevators, but they did have cameras covering all over the lobby and like the entrance to the elevators, like where you walk on to the bank of elevators. They had cameras there. So they brought Trisha in to view the footage and see if she could identify him. And around midnight on the tapes, they see a guy cross through the lobby of the hotel matching Trisha's description. But these security cameras are not exactly state of the art. They're the kind that only record like once every few seconds. So everybody's like looking real jerky, you know, as they're walking.
Right. But like, then what's the point, you know? Like, if you're not going to be able to like look at it and be like, oh, this is Samantha and she's walking across, like, what's the point then?
I think they're more like preventative, like smile, you're on camera, like we've got you, than like really.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're still helpful. They're still useful in investigations. And it's like, I think it has to do with like the space. Like if they're continually recording and it's recording every second, then like they probably just don't have the storage to store all that footage.
Yeah.
You know? And the footage is also pretty blurry and grainy. And they always seem to catch him either walking away from the camera or the side of his face and like with his hat covering his face.
Right.
They see him on the camera by the bank of elevators at the Westin going up to Trisha's floor. And then 25 minutes later, he's back down leaving. So this is definitely the guy. But the footage isn't doing a whole lot to identify him. The day after Jalissa's murder, Detective Duff gets a call from Jalissa's friend, Mary Beth. And she's like, hey, I have information that could help you with your investigation. She was the one that I mentioned earlier that would like book Jalissa's appointments for her.
Basically.
Yeah. And she was like, this appointment was booked with a guy named Andy M., and also, here's the phone number used and the email address I have for this guy. And this information was crucial to this investigation.
Oh, surely he used fake info. Don't tell me this was like actually his information.
So, yes, but it was still helpful. Yeah, it was like a burner phone and the email address had been created like 2 days ago. It was like a throwaway account. But
that means that was his intention. To go kill her.
Exactly. Yes. God, you should be a detective. Because that's exactly what Detective Duff thought. He saw it as proof that this Andy M. person was carefully planning these attacks. So Like, he subpoenaed for, like, all of the phone records and the email records, and that was going to take a few days to get back. But the initial request had given him enough to see that it was a throwaway account and all of that.
Life doesn't happen biweekly, so why should payday? The money you've already earned can be in your hands today with EarnIn. I don't know about you, but I've been in that situation where I have a bill due Tuesday, but payday isn't until Friday. I've already earned the money, I've worked the hours, but because I have to wait on payroll, I'm now risking getting slapped with a late fee. But my options aren't great. I could pay with a credit card that has a high interest rate, or worse, get a payday loan that comes with steep fees and high interest. But now, there's a much-needed alternative out there with EarnIn. EarnIn is a way to access the money you've already earned that you might need before payday hits. It isn't an advance or a payday loan, no high interest rates, no steep fees. They're helping millions of Americans to feel self-sufficient without falling into debt traps. And it's so easy to use. Just download the EarnIn app and verify your paycheck, then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access, plus tips, are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Download EarnIn today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in Creepers under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. Creepers under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See EarnIn.com/TOS for details. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Anyone that knows me knows I'm obsessed with hair care and more recently skincare, but it is so overwhelming. It's hard to even know where to begin. And I hear about all these custom beauty products promising to fix my dry hair and scalp, my damaged ends. But then I find out that after you take some quiz to get it personalized, it turns out they're just sending you some pre-made formula that's not actually personalized. Well, that is not the case with Pros. Pros is here to make all your hair care and skincare wants and needs so easy. And it's actually personalized. Each and every bottle of Pros custom hair and skincare is made to order and personalized with a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs. Nothing is pre-mixed and straight off the shelf, and it's actually effective. In a third-party, double-blind, dermatologist-supervised, controlled clinical study, aka the gold standard in research studies, Pros proved that personalization works better than products straight off the shelf. You can try it for yourself and get your healthiest hair in 30 days or get your money back. In fact, Pros is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering our listeners an exclusive trial offer so that you can see the difference that custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/creepers. That's PROSE.com/creepers for your free consultation and 50% off of your one-of-a-kind formula. PROSE.com/creepers. So while they were waiting for the subpoenaed records to come back, detectives went back to the surveillance footage from the Marriott, which is where Julissa was murdered, to see if they could find the same person from Trisha's attacks that was on the footage at the Westin, if they could find him on the footage the night of Julissa's attacks at the Marriott.
The names had to be so similar, you know?
I know. Trisha, Julissa, I know. They knew that they were looking for a white, blonde male between 6'2 and 6'4, possibly wearing a baseball cap and a black leather jacket. So they start watching the footage about 5 minutes before 10, when the appointment with Julissa was. And they see a person on the camera that was dressed identically. Identical.
Oh, you got to change your outfit.
To the person from the Westin Hotel's footage. Leather jacket, blue jeans, black ball cap. I don't know if they could tell in the footage, but he was also wearing a pink polo. Both nights. They compared the two, like the image from the Westin and the image, this image from the Marriott. And they were like, because they want to make sure that it's the same person. They don't just be like, oh, yeah, it's the same because he's wearing the same thing. So they are looking at height, weight, like build, his demeanor, the way that he walked, clothing. And they looked at all of these factors and they were certain that this was the same person. So they see him go up to the elevator banks at the time of the appointment, And then they wait to see if they see him come back down around the same time or just after those 911 calls started coming in. Mm-hmm. And he does. And he comes back into view and he exits the hotel. But unfortunately, that baseball cap is really doing a lot of work here. It is like you cannot get a clear view of his face because of this baseball cap.
Hmm.
But there's not just surveillance inside the hotel. There's also cameras outside because this Marriott is connected to this very high-end shopping mall called Copley Place. And so detectives know that he's headed in the direction of the mall. And there's actually a walkway that connects the Marriott to the mall. And the entrance to the walkway is covered by a security camera. So they're looking on the footage. They're looking for a guy in a black baseball cap and the black leather jacket. And they don't see him the first time they run through the footage. So they run through it again. And this time they spot him. They missed him the first time because he'd taken the hat off. As if that's like going to just alter his appearance and they're not going to know it's him. But they're certain that it is him. It's the way that he's dressed, the way that he walks. It's all exactly the same. They were like, this guy's a real dummy. He thinks taking that hat off is going to do anything to alter his appearance. But they still cannot get a clear image of his face. It's very frustrating. They continue watching the footage.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Do a little something in the bathroom real quick.
Something.
Or at least get a wig or something. Or take off the jacket or.
Right. Get a buzz cut.
So they continue watching the footage and he's walking away from the camera. But then he turns his head to the side slightly and they get a clear view without the hat on of his profile. So it gives them some facial features to work with.
Wait, where is he at right now?
He's like gone through the walkway from the Marriott to the mall, and now he's like exiting the mall.
But this is on the same surveillance footage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it's like they're following him.
Right. Yeah.
But I just meant they didn't
He didn't come back. This is like the same tape that they're reviewing. Okay.
Yeah. The same night, all of that.
Yeah.
So they can, this is the night of Julissa's murder.
Right.
They continue tracking him out of the mall down the street. I mean, they're following him down the street. Following him from camera to camera along this journey. I love it when they do this. And he seems to be in a real hurry as he's, you know, leaving the mall. He was kind of like casual stroll until he gets out of the mall. And then he's like got a little hustle in his step. So then they bring Trisha back and they're like showing her the footage from the Marriott. And she was able to positively identify him as the person who attacked her. She's like, yes, that is definitely the same person. But they still don't know who he is. So they decide to use the media, who has branded him the Craigslist killer, because they got to be sensational. That is not going to be what this episode is titled, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
They release the surveillance footage and they ask anyone who recognizes him to contact the police. And they start getting hundreds of phone calls. And for every single tip that they get, every single one of these phone calls, they have to create a folder for it so that they can follow up on it. And none of these tips went anywhere. They were all just a big waste of time.
I know that you think you like need, I mean, what are you going to do when you have no other like way to go? But I can just imagine like right before that's about to hit and you know that you're going to just get flooded with false tips that you're like, oh my gosh. Because especially if it's like grainy footage, you know, it's not like just like a great 8x10 headshot, you know?
So yeah, people are, like, I'm hoping like being in Boston that perhaps they had like the resources where they have like the two lead detectives and then they kind of can like have these tips, like these other people going out and running down these tips and just seeing if they lead anywhere. But I don't know. I don't know who's really running all that down. So then they do get a tip that seems pretty credible because it's about somebody named Andy McMasters. And remember, Mary Andy Beth M. had said that Andy M was the appointment. So the tipster said that this Andy McMasters person was robbing people that posted ads on Craigslist. That's the information they get. So they run the name Andrew McMasters through their system, and it comes back as a 41-year-old man with a warrant out for unpaid traffic violations. So they start looking for him. They put a bolo out, be on the lookout for his car, for his description. They went by his house to talk to him, but he wasn't home. And then detectives discuss. So while they're out trying to look for Andy McMasters, now this is also happening. They discovered that 2 days after Julissa's murder, Another very similar incident happened at a Holiday Inn Express in Warwick, Rhode Island, which is about 70 miles south of Boston. And the fact that they were able to connect those two attacks so quickly is pretty impressive to me, because like you're talking separate states, definitely separate jurisdictions. But I guess because this had been all out in the media, maybe this stuff, these attacks in Boston, they were able to connect them.
I mean, it's true about separate states and like jurisdictions. But when you think about it, I'm like, that's like Galveston to like the Kingwood, like the north side of Houston. You know, that's like 70 miles.
Yeah, you're right. You know? It's pretty close.
But and you're it's, right. But different.
You hear about things like it's the next county over. And they never put it together because they don't share information like that across counties. Right. So
it's impressive
for them to get this information so quickly from another state. I don't really know the details of that, of how that happened. But they did get a call from police in Warwick, Rhode Island, to let them know, hey, this happened and we think it's connected. This incident was a 26-year-old named Cynthia Melton. She was a dancer at the Cadillac Lounge, who was advertising lap dances on Craigslist for $100 under the name Amber. She had made the appointment with the man that had attacked her for 11 p.m. on April 16th. Again, it was her last appointment of the night. When Cynthia opened the door, the man pulled a gun on her, made her lie face down on the floor, and bound her arms with zip ties. He then tried to use a ball gag on her, but she kept like shaking her head no and wouldn't let him like attach it to her head, and he gave up. Cynthia said he seemed extremely nervous. His hands were shaking and he just kept repeating that he wasn't going to kill her, that he just needed money because he was broke. He said he needed cash or some cards, and he started rifling through her belongings. But unbeknownst to him, Cynthia had a security system in place. She had her husband, Keith, staying in the room next door for security, and she was supposed to text him when the client got to the room, and when she never texted, he came over and knocked on the door, and the attacker panicked, and he started screaming at Cynthia, asking, who is that? But Keith had an extra key to the room, so he used his key and got into the room to find the man pointing a gun at him. And so Keith, like, slowly backs out of the room, and he is like keeping his eyes on the gunman the whole time. And he's like backing out of the room, but he kind of stumbles over his feet. He trips and he falls down. And the gunman then, as soon as Keith tripped and fell, he just ran out. He ran out, ran down three flights of stairs, and he was gone. And that was it.
Man.
Detectives were really concerned that this man had continued using the exact same MO in this attack, which was after Julissa's murder, which had been splashed all over the media. His image had, like, from the surveillance camera, had been splashed all over the news.
Does he know that?
Well, they're assuming he must. Like, who's committing these attacks and not, like, looking to see if where the investigation into it is?
Yeah.
You know, like, turn on the news. But I don't know. Honestly, I honestly don't know if he knew. But they found it incredibly arrogant that he's doing this. And I think it's pretty arrogant to not even look at, like, are they on to me while you're committing these attacks? Arrogant stupid.
I still didn't
whatever.
I didn't have a smartphone in 2009. So, I mean, I didn't have an iPhone. I had a, you know.
Yeah, but he has the internet. He has email, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think any of these people have smartphones because they were able to just get into their contacts so easily. I kept being like, how are they like getting into their phone and getting the mom's phone number? And how's he getting into Trisha's phone to delete his
getting
phone number?
Contacts is easy.
And then
iPhone.
I was like,
oh, a passcode.
Not if it's locked.
Oh, my God. I forgot about
that.
There used to not be passcodes. Just flip that thing open and all your business is out there.
You just open it up. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Man. But that was before, like, your phone was connected to your bank and, like,
that
all
just,
of
like,
and social media
back.
And all of that.
Yeah, but you know what? I miss the flip phone when you would get real pissed in a fight and you could just, you know, now you're just sliding over. It's not the same.
Right. Well, that's why so many people throw their iPhone and they end up breaking their phones.
Yeah. Give us the flip phone back. I trade my passcode.
They do
for
have
a
flip phone smartphone.
Yeah, but isn't like a Galaxy? I'm not trying to do that. I'm not trying to have the green bubble. I don't want to be that person. If you're that person with the green bubbles, you need to answer for your crimes. You know who you are. Ruining the group text. Way to go. And if you have the green bubble, quit liking or thumbs upping? Because you're giving everybody a separate text about it. Don't use the reactions if you got the green bubble. At least have enough self-respect to do that. Because no one cares.
Just send that Lauren. Up.
Yeah, no one cares that Lauren thumbs up and then had to copy the whole text, okay?
It's trash. So true. It's so true.
Basura. Oh.
Sorry, Green Bubble people. We do love you. We love the androids.
But, no, speak for yourself. I said what I said.
We are in a PR crisis right now. It's okay. I follow this woman on TikTok. I know how to get us out of this. We're just going to move on.
I love that. Moving on.
Okay. So they found that this guy incredibly arrogant, but that's not a good thing when you're looking at like a crime spree happening here. And one person's already been murdered. And this is all within 6 days. Like Trisha's attack was 4 days before Julissa's. And Cynthia's attack was 2 days after Julissa's. So this is less than a week time we're talking about. Once again, he was captured on security cameras in the lobby of the Holiday Inn, as well as in the stairwell of the Holiday Inn. He was really easy to spot because he was wearing the exact same clothes that he wore to the Trisha Leffler attack and to Julissa Brissman's murder. Black jacket, black hat, pink shirt, jeans, shoes.
Does he think he's being smart that like he's not getting DNA or stuff like on all these other outfits? Like he's just got this one thing that's going to have everyone's stuff on it
because he doesn't get rid of it.
Oh, Jiminy.
Jiminy. Okay. So they are very concerned.
But you see how that would have been smart in theory? Like,
I guess, but then you're just so easy to spot every time. He's the guy in the pink polo with the black baseball hat. Like, go get him.
That's very 2009.
So detectives are really concerned that this is the third assault in 6 days. And they knew that this guy's not going to stop if they don't catch him.
And he's definitely not going to change clothes. So
and he's never going to change clothes. And hygiene is important. So, yeah. So the FBI is involved. They started pulling cell tower records near the scene of each crime, looking for a single cell phone number that was active in each location around the times of the attacks. And this is actually a very controversial practice that organizations like the ACLU took a lot of issues with. And like, I can understand why, because like you're kind of using personal information to accuse someone of committing these crimes, but it can also be very helpful.
Versus like already having them like in court and then pulling it, like they're already
like pulling their cell phone records later. And yeah, they instead this is how they're finding him
corroborate
to prove that this is him instead of like using it. Yeah. To corroborate the other evidence that they have at a later time. But they couldn't do any of that because he had actually used a different prepaid phone at every attack. So that's like he's wearing the exact same clothes, but he's bringing a different phone. Investigators were finally able to track down Andrew McMasters, the guy from that tip, and they brought him in for an interview, hoping that this would finally be the end to these attacks. But Andrew McMasters was clearly not the person in the surveillance footage. He was a lot shorter, his build was thicker, and he had dark hair. He also had a really solid alibi for the night of Julissa's murder. He was on a party bus at the time of the murder with like 20 other people, and other people on the bus like were able to provide photos, you know, from the bus proving his alibi. So this is definitely not him. And this is a huge blow to detectives. They were really hoping that the Andy McMasters tip was going to be their big break, but it was just another dead end. They couldn't even find any evidence that the tip they'd gotten had been true at all. This tipster that had said Andy McMasters was robbing people off of Craigslist. They could find no evidence that had happened. So
you don't have to like give any proof when you give a tip, right? I mean, you're just calling. I could be like, I saw this person at the Starbucks. I mean, that's all you don't have to give your name or anything even, do you?
No. And with a Crime Stoppers tip, you can be totally anonymous. They just give you a number that you go by if you end up being able to collect the reward for the tip, if there's like a reward. But finally, all these subpoenaed records came back. The email might have been a throwaway account, but with the subpoena, Microsoft handed over the IP address that was connected with that email. You would think that maybe he would have set that email up and sent it from like a public library or something. No, he did not. No, he did not.
No, so, man's not changing clothes.
Okay? No. So they were then able to subpoena Comcast to tell them what name and address was associated with that IP address. And they got a name and an address. The name was Philip Markoff, and the address of Philip was like 10 miles south of Boston.
Is his middle name Andrew? Or is that just made up?
No. Haynes. Philip Haynes Markoff. Like the underwear.
You could have done something. Oh.
So they immediately start diving into this Philip Markoff. They discover that he's a 23-year-old second-year medical student at Boston University's School of Medicine.
Shut up. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Detectives did not either. This did not seem like the person they were looking for. He lived with his fiance, Megan McAllister, and he had never been arrested before. Like, not a blip on his background report. And there was nothing else in his background to indicate that he was capable of something like this.
Yeah, but a doctor, a med student that's not taking their personal hygiene seriously, I don't trust him.
Well, maybe he was washing the clothes in between wearing them. And med students, they got busy schedules. You know, they're up late studying.
Yeah.
They're probably wearing the same thing a few days in a row. His father was a dentist in Syracuse, New York, and his family lived very comfortably, affluently even. He graduated from Vernon Verona Sherrill High School, which just sounds fancy, but I think it's like a regular public school. It's a good one. He was a member of the National Honor Society, the History Club, the Youth Court, and on the bowling and golf team.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Hitting them all.
He has a great resume. He graduated with honors and he went pre-med to SUNY Albany. This was a suspect like none that Detective Duff had ever had before, but he knew that many times killers will try to blend in as model citizens. Having a stellar, sparkling, clean resume doesn't mean that you don't have a dark side.
That's so true.
Mm-hmm. They also subpoenaed Facebook, and they got a 60-page document on Philip, which included his profile, tagged photos, wall posts, friends lists, and a complete history of his logins and the IP addresses associated with all of those logins. Now, Facebook came out and was...
Tagged photos? That's my worst nightmare. And mine would not be 60 pages. Are you kidding? In college, it'd be like 60 pages per month. Remember, that's the only way to communicate is like writing on each other's wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get out.
Facebook has since come out and said that they would no longer give this amount of information. If it was subpoenaed, they would require a search warrant for this amount of information. But whatever. This is what they gave them. Facebook. In the pictures.
You just said Facebook. I want to subpoena Facebook for my mom's purchase history because someone needs to take away her access to ordering stuff off there.
Yeah. Yeah. You should set her up with one of those like credit cards that's like monitored like for kids, you know? You can only use this for online purchases.
That and one of those cell phones only has like 3 buttons for emergency contacts because she also doesn't need a smartphone.
So they get all these pictures of him from Facebook and they could see that he definitely resembled the description that they had of the killer. He was tall. He was blonde. He was clean cut. He was medium build. But because the security camera had never given a super clear picture of his face, they could not be certain that it was him.
Yeah.
But they had the killer's fingerprints. And if they could just get Phillip's, they could compare them. So they put Philip under surveillance immediately. They staked out the apartment that he lived in with his fiance, Megan, and they followed him everywhere he went, including this trip to the grocery store where, like, I need you to just picture this. They're following him around this grocery store, like these undercover detectives, and everything he picks up off the shelf and, like, puts back on the shelf and walks off,
in their cart.
They go and grab it and, like, put it in evidence bagging.
What a scavenger hunt.
I know.
That'd be hard not to get caught. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm not that observant, but I feel like maybe I would notice if someone was, like, they're probably keeping enough steps behind. Mm-hmm. But that's interesting.
Yeah.
Man. I want to, like, specifically cherry pick all the duties I want when we do these cases. Uh-huh. Like the tagging, the evidence.
Oh, right.
Or like the scavenger hunt.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to do the stuff of, like, tracking down all these tips and like all of that.
Yeah. I don't want to do any crime scene photos. I don't want to see any of that. But you got a little dog that needs to go sniff around somewhere. I'm down for that. I'll bag up some evidence.
So they bagged everything for evidence. They were hoping that they could get prints off of them. And then they also requested the surveillance footage from the store. So they sent the items off to the lab for analysis, and they got not a single usable print off of this grocery store excursion. It's very disappointing. They then showed Cynthia Melton a photo lineup that included Philip Markoff. And she paused on his photo, but she could not positively identify him. She said she was at about a 6 out of 10 that it was him, and that she just wasn't sure enough. And her husband, Keith.
It's a very safe score.
Yeah, her husband, Keith, said the same thing. This was the one from the last attack at the Holiday Inn in Rhode Island. Mm. So investigators just don't have enough to arrest him here. But he's still under surveillance. And on April 20th, so this is all happening very quickly. Like,
yeah.
Julissa was murdered on the 14th. Okay. Trisha was attacked on the 10th. So this is like 10 days after the very first attack. They've got him under surveillance and they watch him and they see him and Megan start loading up their car with suitcases. Like they're heading out of town and they're like, that's not good. If he gets out of town, like we don't have we could lose jurisdiction over him. We could lose him and he could go attack somebody else in this, wherever he's going.
Does he know at this point that does he know that they're on to him at all? They haven't talked to him.
Nope. They haven't brought him in for questioning. They haven't done anything.
Okay. That's what I thought.
So they end up pulling him over and discover that he and Megan were headed towards the Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut, which might sound familiar because I'm pretty sure that that was the casino that what's his name from the Bad Vegan episode spent so much time in during that episode. I think that's where I'd heard of it. Mm. But when they pull him over, they can't arrest him. They don't have any evidence against him. So they just ask him to come in for an interview. And they agree.
Did they say for what? Are they like, oh, no. Why? You just pulled us over?
No.
Okay, I'm definitely not doing that.
I don't know. I would probably do whatever they wanted me to do, honestly. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, so would I.
I would probably make a million phone calls first. I don't know. I'd call my mom. Mom, what do I do? There was no question in Detective Duff's mind that the person that he was interviewing was the person on those surveillance videos.
Really?
But the interview with Philip does not go well. They go through the Miranda rights with him, and then the first thing that the detective says to him is that he is a person of interest in these robberies and a homicide. So what's the first thing Philip says? I want a lawyer.
I need a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they go back and forth for a while. The investigator lets Philip know they have photos from surveillance cameras at the hotels where the crimes were committed, and that the person in the photos looks a lot like Philip. And Philip tells the detective that he can't remember if he's even been in a hotel in the last couple of weeks. He thought maybe he walked through one time to get somewhere, do some shopping, go to a restaurant. He couldn't really remember. And that his parents came into town and he might have gone to their hotel, but that was a while back and he just can't remember anything. So Detective Duff asks him if he's ever stopped at a hotel in Rhode Island. And he says, I don't think so. As if you like,
okay, I was
wouldn't remember.
I was just about to say, like, oh, that's all suspicious. He doesn't know if he's been in a hotel the last couple weeks. But then I started thinking, can you name any of the restaurants you've eaten at in the last 3 weeks?
I absolutely would be able to know. I absolutely would be able to name the restaurants.
I just tried doing it. And I'm like, where have I been in the last 3 weeks? What restaurants have I eaten at? And I can't do it. Can you?
I could definitely say if I had been to a hotel, because I go to restaurants all of the time. I don't go to hotels all of the time. So if this is somebody who frequently goes to hotels all of the time for like travel or work or whatever, then I could see it being like, yeah, I'm not sure. But I know whether or not like in the last 3 weeks.
I guess you're right. I guess the hotel is different, but I was just trying to think.
And this is not 6 weeks later. This is not 6 months later. This is 4 days after Cynthia's attack. And you can't tell me if 4 days ago you were at a hotel in Rhode Island. You don't think so? He's like, you don't think you've been at a hotel in Rhode Island? And he just says, I don't think so. I don't think I was at a hotel in Rhode Island. Maybe I was. Ugh.
You would know. Like, that's a whole other state. Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm following.
Yeah. Throughout all of this, Philip asked for a lawyer at least 20 times. But he
keeps talking.
He does. But he's not saying a whole lot. He's just kind of like, I don't think so. I don't know. I can't remember if I was at a hotel. I can't remember if I was here. Are you going to get me that lawyer you said you were going to get me? I need a lawyer. I don't know how to get a lawyer. How do you get a lawyer? Aren't you supposed to go get me a lawyer? Aren't you supposed to get a lawyer for me? Where's that lawyer you said you were going to get? I mean, this is the whole... The show notes has the entire transcript of the interview, so you can go read it there. It is not interesting. It is just him saying, get me a lawyer 20 times. So finally the detective ends the interview when he's like firmly like, I want to stop this interview and I want a lawyer. If Philip had asked to leave this interview, if he had said, can I go? They would have had no choice but to let him leave. But he didn't ask to leave. I guess he thought he had to stay there. But just FYI, just ask to leave. The worst they could say is
they don't always follow the rules. Like, I feel like they would just be like,
that's
no,
very
even
true.
Though they have to.
Yeah, that's,
you know, and then you're like,
that's very true. But also that could be so damaging. Like, this guy could get away with it because you didn't let him go. You know what I mean? Let him go and keep him under surveillance and follow him around until he messes up again. But don't risk the case on it. But he didn't ask to leave. He stayed there. Meanwhile, while they're doing this interview with him, they're also interviewing Megan McAllister, his fiance. And her interview goes quite differently. These detectives are actually able to get a lot of information from her. They don't start the interview with, hey, this is why you're here, like they did with Philip, which I feel like was not the best way to go. But they really just start asking her things like, what kind of laptop and phones do you use? What type of Wi-Fi do you guys have? What websites are you using a lot? Has anybody ever come to your house and used your computer? And so Megan is like, seems like she's answering their questions. She wants to be cooperative with the police, but she's like, why are you asking me this kind of a thing? But she doesn't really say that, not for a while. I cannot imagine what Megan McAllister must have been thinking here. Like, an hour ago, she's just cruising along, going on a little getaway with her fiance. They'd been together for like 4 years at this point, something like that.
She's probably so excited for a little trip.
Yeah, a little trip. She's planning this lavish wedding to this man that's 4 months away. Their wedding was going to be in August. This is April. And now she is in a police interrogation room with no idea what the hell is going on. She told police that she was planning on starting medical school in the Caribbean just after the wedding, and that at the moment they were both just living off of Philip's student loans, which were around $130,000 at this point. She told detectives that she and Philip were usually home together basically 24 hours a day because Phil would just watch the lectures of his classes online instead of like going to class, but that she had been visiting her parents in New Jersey for the past month. So she hadn't been home for the past month. That was the longest that she'd ever been away. And she said they were new to the Boston area because they'd moved there when he had started med school like the year before. And so they didn't have a lot of friends in that area yet. And so they'd never, ever, 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 she said, had anyone over to their apartment.
Seems very definitive, but...
Yeah. I mean, because she doesn't know what she's like... Right. Defending, she doesn't know. And so she's just like being honest. She's just telling the truth here.
Yeah.
So they ask her about their, which I think is smart because I might be, even if I want to tell the truth, even if I'm like, there's no way that my fiance is involved in this, I would want to try to like cover for him. I would try, even if there's like, I feel like there's nothing to cover, but I don't want to say something that's going to get him in trouble when I know that he didn't do this thing. So she just has no idea what's going on.
Or you're just like so nervous, like you're still telling the truth, but you just sound all shaken up because you're like freaking out. You know, I think about all the times when I am telling the truth. This came up when we were playing this game. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to like, you know, trick the other person. And I'm like telling the truth, but people are trying to catch me like not telling the truth. And I just can't quit laughing. And they're like, you're lying because you're laughing. I'm like, no, I literally am telling the truth. I just can't stop laughing. And so it's like, I would be a mess. I would be a mess.
And it is the most frustrating thing when I know that I am telling the truth and I know that I am not being believable. Like, I know the way I'm saying this is not believable. I know this person does not believe I'm telling the truth. And I know I am. Why am I acting so shady about it? I'm just like, knock it off, Kristen. Like, why are you acting this like
this? This does not sound truthful. Yeah. I am telling
you. I can hear it. I'm hearing it.
It's weird, too, because we all have felt that way. Like, that's such like a relatable feeling, but we have all have been all? Like, this person's not telling the truth.
I was worried I was a sociopath. Definitely. So. Okay, good.
I mean, you might still be, but not because of that.
Okay, great. So they ask her about their finances. They ask Megan about their finances. And she said she wasn't aware of any financial trouble or noticed any more money than usual. She said they were going
Girl, please. You're planning a wedding. You in financial trouble.
Well, yeah. They were definitely like struggling college kids. Like, they're living off of his loans. They're like making do with what they have, basically. But they also had like pretty well-off parents that were helping them out. And they were like able to like eat and live in Boston just fine. She said that they were going to Foxwoods, the casino, but that it was because the casino had offered them a deal on the room. And she said that they were like, do they offer everybody deals on the room, or does Philip like go there all the time? And that's why they're offering him a deal. And she was kind of cagey about it. She was like, I don't think she basically was like, he goes there once or twice a month. He's not like up there all of the time. But I think he's up there a lot more than she said. Another thing, I did use two books for this, and one of them goes through like all the times he's going to these casinos, and like, but it's not like a chronological story. So like, I think he was going to the casinos a lot more than she knew about. She said that when he would gamble, it was pretty low stakes, and mostly he just played blackjack. She said that money had been tight, like I said, money was tight, even with Philip taking out the maximum amount of loans, but also that it wasn't really stressful for them because they'd been living that way for 2 years. This wasn't like a new financial burden. They had like money had been tight for a while for them, and they had figured out ways to make it work and still live their lives and
learn to adjust.
Yeah. She asked the police a few times, like, what this is all about. And they tell her they're not ready to tell her that until about halfway through the interview, when they finally tell her that they're investigating some activity from a computer in their house for online massage services. And now here, she is obviously very confused. This is honestly sad to me to listen to this interview and watch this interview, because you can just see that she's trying to make it make sense. Like, she is trying to figure out how what they're saying could be true and what she knows to be true could also be true. And so she tells them, well, I get massages all the time. Like, she has a lot of back problems. She had back surgery. But then they're like, okay, these massages that you get, do you like go to a salon or a spa? And she's like, yeah, I get them. You know, she's not ordering a massage off of Craigslist. But she doesn't.
But she's not like realizing. Like, I can't imagine like getting that information, and you're like so confused. You feel like, okay, cool. So I'm definitely being cheated on, and also,
I don't know that that's I don't know that that's what she's thinking here. I don't think she's thinking that at all here. I think she's like, massage services. Well, I get massages, so maybe this is about me.
But you think the police are calling you in because you go to Massage Envy every month?
Well, she's like, something about massage services, so maybe this has something to do with my massage. She's like, I don't know. So she tells police that Philip has never gotten a massage in his life. So that's what her truth. So that is like not a possibility. This can't have anything to do with him. He's never gotten a massage in his entire life.
So now she thinks it's her. Like, she thinks she's the one.
Yeah, or like, I think she still is like, I don't know what the hell is going on. So she asks them, how do they know that it's his computer? And they explain about IP addresses. And she asks them, like, couldn't somebody hack into their, I mean, she's literally trying to like pull anything. Couldn't somebody hack into their Wi-Fi? And it was really this other person that was hacking into their Wi-Fi. Couldn't that be this person that was doing these massage services or whatever? And I feel like holding on to that, like, she thinks of this explanation. And she's like, that must be it. It's the only thing that makes sense to her, because to her, she is dead certain that her fiance is not on his computer booking massage services on Craigslist.
Yeah. Right.
So then they start showing her.
Really know somebody, you know? Ugh.
I mean, truly, truly. Well, except Russell. We know Russell. He's a damn golden retriever.
I know, but don't act like you haven't increased your amount of fiance stories that we've been doing around here. It's like, his fiance. I'm like, what? Where did all these come from?
I do think about that every time, though. I'm like, damn. She's going to like, it's just been she's going to relate to this. She's going to relate this to her and Russell, and it's going to be a whole thing. They're getting married in August. God.
I'll get over
He's
it.
Like clean cut, like preppy golf team.
I know. Listen, if you don't think I'm about to go through all the search history, all the phone.
Truly, you should. Just make yourself feel better, because I guarantee you it's clean as a whistle.
I know.
So they start showing her some pictures, like screenshots from the surveillance photos from the hotels. And the first one she says, like, looks like Phil. She's not like, that is him. But she's like, yeah, that looks like him. But every other picture.
Do you think she's in denial, or do you think she's covering for him?
No, denial. I don't think she's covering for him. I think she's 100% steadfast.
Not sure what's happening.
He is not involved in this at all. Like, I know he's not involved. Complete denial. So every other picture, the first one she's like, that looks like him, or that kind of looks like him. Every other picture, she's less certain. She said it may be him. It may not be him. She says that guy looks heavier than Phil. She says those are definitely not his shoes. She says she knows all of the shoes that he wears, all of the shoes that he owns.
She definitely does, because you know he's leaving them all over the damn floor.
She says that she monitors all of his shoes because she picks them all out for him, and then she hides the ones that she doesn't like from him. So she really knows all the shoes that he has, and those are not his shoes.
I really respect that. It's like the time I got rid of all my boyfriend's cargo shorts at the time. Bye.
Mm-hmm. She says his hair looks different in this picture. It looks longer than his hair.
Oh, sweet girl.
I know.
Sweet, sweet girl.
She is clearly trying to pick anything out of these photos that she can to hold on to tell herself that this is not her fiance on these photos. It's just someone who looks like him. And I've got to say, there were probably thousands of people in that city that looked like Phil. Tall, young, blonde, clean cut, medium build. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like pretty generic.
Yeah.
But she does admit that he has a leather jacket like the one in the photo. They finally tell her that these photos were all taken from the Marriott at Copley Square. And they ask her if she's been watching the news at all. And that's when it clicked what this whole thing was about. Mm-hmm. She hadn't watched the news. She's like, people my age don't really watch the news. Or maybe he said that. I think he might have said that. That seems like something he would say. But her mom had told her about some guy going around to hotels and attacking women. And again, I cannot imagine what must be going through her head at that moment, that she's like, that's why we are here. Because they think my fiance is this man going around to hotels and attacking women. Like, I can't imagine what she's thinking, but it is very clear that at this moment, she is convinced, or at least has convinced herself, that Phil has nothing to do with this, that he's been framed, or they've somehow like focused on him because of this IP address thing that could be explained with these other, somebody hacked in, or it was somebody else at the apartment complex or whatever. So the detectives move on from the photos. They don't get anywhere with her from the photos. And they start talking about his gambling. And Megan is insistent that it is just a little hobby of his, that if he's winning, he'll keep playing, but if he's losing, then he'll stop. And that he never leaves the casino with less than what he walked in with. And that he rarely goes to the casino without her. She's usually there with him. And that's like maybe once or twice a month. But again, he's going, at least in this time when she was in New Jersey, he was going a lot more than he was telling her.
Yeah, it's just hard. You don't really know what he's doing, obviously.
Well, she's like, we're talking throughout the day. Like, she thinks she knows exactly what he's doing. Ugh.
Yeah.
So at the end of the interview, Megan asked them, do you think this is the guy that's been in these hotels? And the detective tells her that that's why we're here, because we think he's the guy.
Yes.
So she asks, like, is he like one of many suspects that you have, or is he like one of two suspects? And they're like, he's
one of one.
The suspect. Like, he's the one suspect. And so she's like, is this something that I should be worried about? Should I be like, I think we see here that she's not so resolute in thinking that there's just no possibility that this is him. She's starting to be like, right. She asks if there's any reason that she should be scared to go home with him. But she still leaves the interview maintaining that she would never, ever think that he would ever do something like this.
What's that car ride going to be like for the two of them after this?
Yeah. After these interviews, Trisha Leffler, the first victim from the Westin, she was shown the same photo array that had been given to Cynthia. And Trisha did positively identify Philip Markoff as the person who attacked her. And she said she's 1,000,000% sure. So that...
Well, she spent way more time with him. Cynthia's,
yeah, she did.
Right. Mm-hmm. The last woman was like... Probably in there for 5 minutes before Keith came in. Mm-hmm. Trisha, he was like browsing.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Like, yeah, she had a lot more time to look at him. And she very positively identified him. She said she's 1,000,000% sure that that's him. And that ends up being enough for a search warrant for Philip's apartment. And in his apartment, because, again, we're working with a criminal mastermind here, they find basically everything they need for a slam dunk case. They find a gun in a hollowed out copy of Grey's Anatomy, the medical textbook, not a DVD case like I first thought.
Wait, that's the name of a book?
Like, yeah, that's the medical? Yeah, that's what it's named after, is Grey's Anatomy. It's
what?
Like an anatomy textbook.
Who's Grey?
Yeah, you didn't know that? Oh, I taught you something new. Yeah. So this medical textbook, this Grey's Anatomy, hollowed out with a gun inside of it, was taped.
That's insane.
Yeah, and it was taped to the back of their dryer. And it had bullets that matched the ones that were used to kill Julissa Brissman.
Whoa, hold on, back up. First of all, the textbook is hollowed out, the gun's in it. The textbook is in taped to the back of the washer.
Uh-huh,
dryer. One, that's got to be heavy. Two, I know that like with a search warrant, you're like searching everything, but I don't think that I would like back the washer dryer away from the wall and see if something's taped behind it. Like, I mean, I get that you're like pulling up the cushions, you're moving furniture, you're like,
well, let this be a lesson to you, Detective Mogab. Always check the back of the dryer.
It's like the first thing I'm about to go. Yeah. Whoa. That's
yeah.
Crazy.
Go check your dryer right now. I feel like they always find stuff by the dryer, in the dryer, or
in
I'm
the
sure
dryer,
they're always
the camera.
Checking. Yeah. The dryers. And the washers.
But the hollowed out textbook, if you're going to hide it and tape it to the dryer, that seems like unnecessary. Like, it's not like it was in the book and then the book was on the bookshelf. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to tape it to the back of the dryer, the book feels pointless to me. Like, put it in a bag. Tape the,
and tape
you know,
the
like,
bag to the back. Right. Because if
seems weird.
Because if there's a
why would there
book
be a book?
Taped to the dryer. People are definitely opening it up and looking.
Yeah, there's something
that's
in there.
That's a really good point.
I don't think if you need this textbook that every time you're going to the back of your dryer and untaping it.
That's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. They also found a backpack that was full of white flex cuffs identical to the restraints that had been used on all of the victims. There were like 60 pairs of these flex cuffs, like zip ties, in this backpack.
Oh my gosh, she was just going to like keep going. Okay.
Who knows? As well as in this backpack, they also have found duct tape and disposable cell phones, like a bunch of disposable cell phones.
Did she not know? Like,
She never looks in the backpack.
Did they find any of the women's stuff?
They found 16 pairs of women's underwear hidden under his bed.
Gross.
Some of those belonged to two of the victims. I'm not sure which two. I don't know which two. I definitely don't think that bodes well when you think about if there's victims that we don't know about. You know, because if you think about the types of victims that he's going after, they're usually not victims that are going to report stuff. Yeah, and I go into this later, but Cynthia Melton, who was like the other two were like massages. You know, you can take what you want like from that. But they said no full service massages. It was just like a sensual massage. But Cynthia Melton was offering lap dances. But in Rhode Island at the time, prostitution was legal behind closed doors. You couldn't like walk on the street, but behind closed doors, it was legal. It's not anymore. They've made it illegal now. I don't know why they're going backwards on that, but that's why she felt safe. Like, that's why she was okay calling the police and reporting it, because she knew she wasn't going to get in trouble. So think about if there's other victims in Boston that were like more obviously sex workers that just were attacked and are not gonna, like, they weren't murdered, so they're not like showing up at a murder scene police and they were just attacked, and so they're just not coming forward to report it. I'm sure there are victims that we don't know about. Probably 14 of them.
14.
Yeah. And on his laptop's hard drive, they found the Craigslist correspondence with Julissa, like setting up an appointment with her. So.
And listen, Phil, you're lucky the cloud doesn't exist, because I don't know how that works, but I guarantee that if your business is in the cloud, you're screwed.
Well, this was like, on his hard drive. So
that's what I'm saying. So like, you're lucky that, like, I don't know, stuff's just not floating out there too.
MoGab doesn't understand the cloud.
I don't. We had a whole meeting about it the other day, and I was like,
"She doesn't.
What
she doesn't
is
get
OneDrive? It's too much for me." If someone does understand the online cloud, I would love.
It is online storage. It's just online storage.
I know that. But if someone knows how it works, I would really love to have a meeting with you before Wednesday at 3 p.m. next Wednesday. That'd be really
great. It works.
Thank you.
On the internet.
On the intrawebs. I know that, but like.
Do you want somebody to come and explain to you like the technicality of how the internet works?
SharePoint and OneDrive? Yeah, I would love that before next Wednesday at 3 p.m. Thank you. That's when I need that.
So Philip Markoff is arrested and charged with armed robbery, the kidnapping of Trisha Leffler, and the murder of Julissa Brissman. Yeah, I was surprised at first that they charged him with kidnapping for Trisha Leffler. And then I thought about it and I was like, yeah, he tied her up at in the room. Like, he kept her from being able to leave. Like, I should have looked up the actual definition of kidnapping. But yeah,
I'm surprised. I was going to say, I'm surprised it's not called something else, but like.
Yeah, I think that's like just kind of the blanket term for. Yeah, but entrapment is something else. Trapping.
Yeah.
So now that he's in custody, they're able to get his clothes, his DNA, his fingerprints, the shoes, MoGab. The shoes he was wearing at the time of his arrest, when he is arrested, were taken. And detectives noticed they had stains on them, like little drops all over them. These little drops turned out to be blood stains, and the blood matched Julissa Brissman's DNA. He is wearing the shoes he wore that day. That's how I knew he didn't get rid of his clothes, like you had thought.
Set them on fire.
He did not. He was wearing them. He was probably wearing them when they picked him up and questioned him.
So cocky. Yeah.
Yes.
And they did the interview.
The arrogance of this guy is astounding, because he did not make it very far before he got caught. Like, he had no reason to be this arrogant. He left two eyewitnesses at least alive. He wears the same outfit to every attack. He's seen on so many security cameras.
Yeah.
He continues to wear the same shoes, including after he was questioned by police. They already told him, "We think you did this," and he's still wearing the shoes with her blood on them.
He still didn't like go home and like change anything about this. Truly can't be as simple as like, we're struggling college students and we need money.
No, and that's what, like, police think too. And we'll like get into that in a little bit, but yeah, totally. The only thing he ever did to try to disguise his appearance was wear a hat and put on gloves some of the time. Like, that is it. And wear the hat some of the time. He wasn't wearing the hat on some of these cameras either. The only thing that was still just baffling to detectives was the motive. Money just did not seem to be the motive here. It seemed a lot more complex than that. They just couldn't figure out why a second-year medical student with a beautiful fiancé and a great future ahead of him would ruin it all for attacking women in hotel rooms for, like, a couple $100.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're getting, like, what, maybe $1,000?
Yeah.
In cash? Yeah. But that's not, yeah.
So when investigators searched Philip's laptop, they found information that might be indicative of his actual motive.
Oh, I already know.
Oh, what do you think?
My man's got a huge gambling problem, and he owes a lot of people a lot of money.
So I don't think he does. I don't think that he does have a huge gambling problem. He does gamble, but he was up some. He would like use this money that he was stealing to go to the casino and go like gamble it. And he won like $5,000 one time. And he was up. So I never read anything about him owing debts or them proving that he owed debts. Could be. But he was gambling the money. I mean, I guess you could go gamble the money to try to like get more money to pay your debts.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Because Megan also never noticed any like windfall of money. So if he these thousands of dollars that he won that one time, he lost also at the casino, but he did win a pretty good. He had a pretty good night there. One of these nights. No, what they found was that Philip had this secret life online, one that no one in his real life would even suspect, even think that he was into. He used the username sexaddict5385 on several websites, including ones like Adult Friend Finder and Passion.com, which while all of that might be like embarrassing to somebody, it's not something that you wouldn't find like millions of other people on also, you know. But then police got a tip to search for the same username, but with an extra 8 in the number. And when they did that, so it was sexaddict53885. So when they did that, they found his profile on several other sites, including alt.com, which caters to people looking into alternative lifestyles, and Extreme Restraints, which claims it is the ultimate fetish store for people interested in bondage and other alternative lifestyles, which I can just about guarantee you that Megan McAllister was not into these same things that, that he is clearly interested in. He posted on alt.com that he was interested in email exchange, phone fantasies, and active participation with men, women, transsexuals, and transgender people. He said he wanted to be a submissive. He had been exploring these sites starting like 2 years before the attacks. Before he'd even asked Megan to marry him, he was like getting into these communities online and then continuing up until his arrest. But again, there are many, many people, people that you would never think who are into this kind of stuff. There's a reason there's a huge market for it.
Yeah.
It's really not unusual. And they also have no interest in like attacking women, you know, like being into that doesn't mean you are into attacking women. So I don't think that's like, you know, what I do think is that obviously Philip Markov was a monster. And I think that there might be an argument that feeling the need to suppress these interests, these fetishes, keep this secret from everybody you know, could potentially cause some like festering rage. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't care. He's a dirtbag.
No, I agree. I'm, no, this is not me making excuses.
No, I know. I just, over him.
Especially when you consider like who his targets are, that they are like women that are in the sex industry or at least like adjacent to. There's also theories that maybe Philip was really close to being unmasked, that somebody was going to expose him and expose these secrets of his. And so that was like this trigger that led to this crime spree, which, again, lasted 6 days.
That we know of.
That we know of.
13 other pairs of underwear.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. Megan visited Philip in jail several times. She was fiercely defending Philip to the media. She accused the Boston police of setting him up. And she said that she still loved him and would continue to support him throughout this legal process. She said that the person the media was portraying him to be was not the person that she knew. And she said that to her and her family, he was a loving and caring person, beautiful inside and out, and that he was innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And she said that she hoped that he would be tried in a court of law and not in the court of public opinion.
Public opinion. Listen, girl, I know that you, what you are saying is true. That is not the person you know, but there's two different people.
Well, I think that
you got to reconcile that.
It would be so hard for everyone who knew Philip to picture him being capable of attacking these women and murdering one of them. And Megan was definitely in denial. I mean, her entire life is being flipped upside down with this. But this denial, it really didn't last very long. A couple of weeks.
Okay.
A couple of weeks later, she was seen visiting him without her engagement ring, and her lawyer announced that the wedding was unlikely. And then she moved out of the apartment that she and Philip had shared.
What are their conversations? Is he trying to convince her that he didn't do it?
I don't know.
Is he saying anything?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. No, I think he's for sure. He for sure was trying to convince her that he was innocent, though. Like, he never admitted to any of this. He
never pled guilty.
No, he pled not guilty. He was moved to the psychiatric unit of the jail after he tried to complete suicide a couple of different ways that I'm not going to explain. He was put under constant monitoring around the clock, and he started saying ominous things to his family, like that they should move to California and forget about him, and how there was a lot more that was going to come out. And nobody knows when he said this if he meant there's a lot more victims that are going to come out, or if he meant all the information from his computer about these like websites yeah. that hadn't been released yet, if maybe he was talking about that stuff. But as far as I know, no other victims were ever identified of his. So nobody came out after and was like, oh, yeah, that guy attacked me, too, or anything like that. But, you know, that's the thing with targeting sex workers. Like, they're going to protect mm-hmm. themselves when they're not doing something that's legal and they could get in trouble. They're not going to come out and try to help a case. They're like, oh, the guy got caught. You know, the job is done.
Yeah, they're like, just glad he's off.
I don't want to get involved. Yeah. Right.
You know, it's so sad for the fiance. Obviously, like, she's trying to, like, cope with what's happening. But I think about, like, his family, who it's like, you know, she's known him for however many years, five, six, whatever. But your family, who's, like, in their eyes, like, you were National Honor Society, on the golf team, bowling team. Like, you were going to medical school. Your dad's a dentist. You're going to be a doctor. Like, just – and then for all of that. And you feel like you've had a part in it because you raised him. You think you've taught him right from
and
wrong.
And who's saddled with those loans, like, now?
Oh, girl, don't get me started on that. I'll set up a GoFundMe for his mama or something. But, I mean, it's just terrible of, like, I don't know.
You just, like, ruined it all. And so
what?
Bizarrely, like, for what? Like, you murdered this beautiful young woman who had a family that loved her for, like, nothing. For nothing. You got nothing from that murder. Maybe a thrill, I guess, if maybe that's what you were looking for. Maybe he, I don't know. But
is that still taking you through when you're, like, sitting in this prison cell?
Well, and it doesn't seem like murder was his, like, motivation.
Right.
Like, he didn't want to murder, like, he wasn't murdering other people. He just wanted to dominate them. Like, I don't know. But he never had to answer any of these questions because he never made it to trial. On August 16th, this is the night before their wedding would have been, he completed suicide in his jail with an object that he shaved into a razor, and he used his anatomical knowledge of the human body to kill himself. He wrote Megan's name in blood on the wall of his cell.
How dare he? Cool, as if you haven't ruined her life already. Now she's got to live with
truly,
that.
Truly, truly, yeah.
Like, God, leave her alone.
He also wrote the word pocket on the wall. And he left several photos of Megan scattered around this cell when he died. It's so crappy when they do this. Not just the blood writing on the wall and what he's done to Megan. That's terrible. But to kill yourself when you're in prison, when you're in jail awaiting trial and you kill yourself. And now that family of that girl that you murdered and those victims that are still alive don't have the trial to, like, try to find any sort of closure. Like, that's the time when a lot of victims find that, okay, I can move on from this terrible thing that happened to me. Like, I can.
Between their victim impact statements.
Yeah.
It's like the attempt.
And that was robbed from all of these people because he did that. Because he, whatever, because he's a piece of crap.
Yeah, like, I mean, not that we obviously condone it, but, like, let the trial happen. You get sentenced and, you know, what's the difference to you if you're ending your own life? Like, I don't know.
Right.
Because you're selfish. You don't care about anybody else.
My last paragraph is two sentences, and those are, he sucks. I feel bad for Megan.
Yeah. Retweet.
That's
what
basically.
What does pocket mean?
Oh, Fox 25 has learned that pocket was a term that Markoff and McAllister used for each other in their relationship. Pocket is like a little pet name.
Cute.
Cute. If he wasn't a jackass who then wrote it in blood on his jail cell.
It's like, did you love her? Like, I mean, you're making it seem like you're devastated, you've ruined this thing. But, like, you didn't care when you were with her. It's not like you...
I don't know, because that would... Then we would have to know why he did what he did, and we don't. And I think that... I don't know if people like this, the people that are monsters like this, are capable of really feeling love for another person at all.
Yeah.
But I think that normal people can, like, compartmentalize their love for one person and not look at, like, these bad things that they're doing over here as, like, risking that relationship. Impacting. Like, they're, like, separate things. And I think that's
possible. I'm not dismissing what he did to the women. I'm not saying, like, forget about that. But if this was a different scenario and this isn't, like, what Philip did, if this is just truly, like, an affair.
Right.
But you're, like, in love with your fiancé, like, do you think that, like, two people – like, do you think that that's possible, that he could really love his fiance, but then be going to get these, like, massages at this casino part wasn't happening?
If the murdering and attacking and, like, that part of it, if he was just going to get the massages, yeah, I think so. I think that it's unfair for Megan to not, like, know about that and be able to be part of it and be able to be, like, a consensual, like, yes, that's okay. Yeah. But I think that you have people in open relationships. You have people in... Yeah. You know, all sorts of different kinds of relationships that have real love for their person. And I think some of us can't understand it because we don't.
Non-conventional.
Yeah, that's not like the way that we feel. But yeah, I think it's totally possible.
I just think it's like so hard that she didn't know. I think it's unfair that she didn't know him.
100%.
Like, this whole online life that she didn't know about. Like, so it's like you're not letting her be.
And you're not letting her know the real you. So she can never decide. She can never choose to love you because she doesn't have all the information.
Yeah.
So you're a little secret. But again, you know, I think a lot of it is like, I'm not blaming society for this or anything. Okay. Don't get me wrong. But I think that when we have these like societal pressures and taboos and like things that are, you know, not okay to discuss like publicly in society, they're looked down upon. I think it can force people to go inward and like portray this like person on the outside that society wants them to be when they know that's not who they are. And I think sometimes it ends up like this. And I'm not saying that that's definitely what happened here. And I'm not saying that he's not responsible for his actions, because he is. But I'm saying maybe we be a little less judgmental and maybe we see how that, you know, works itself out.
Oh, you're a little optimist, you.
In the future. Yeah. Just like love everybody.
You need to calm down.
You're getting too loud. Hey, I don't know if we've mentioned it, but we're going to Taylor.
Oh my gosh. Should we talk about it some more?
No, I think we should do some shout outs. We have not done shout outs in a time. I think it is about time for some shout outs.
It has been a minute since we've done shout outs, and I am so excited.
Me too. Okay.
And I like that we're starting it out with something easy, breezy, fresh.
Okay.
A major shout to Justine Arnold. She didn't say this, but I'm going to say it. Arnold is in my freshman dorm, which that place has not been torn down, and that thing needs to go.
My dorm was turned down. Yours had no air conditioning. Arnold had no air conditioning, and it's still there. And Falls needs to be turned down.
The new Falls, though. The new Falls is great. But shouts to you, Justine Arnold. Let me know if you're related to Arnold as in Arnold Hall at Texas State University. The Arnold Hall.
I'm sure she is. Next up, we've got Beth Denton. It's just like the city in Texas.
Oh, major shouts to Denton, Texas, home of Eli Young Band, one of my personal favorites.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Beth. We love you.
Somewhere near Dallas. Yes. Love you, Beth. Thank you so much.
Which is somewhere near Arlington, which is where you're going to see Taylor Swift.
That's true.
I don't know if we've told the people.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to Arlington show. So if you're going to be there April 1st, let me know. This episode is going to drop 2 days before the concert. So
next, we have Kat.
I love it when they do this. She said, I'd prefer to see how y'all think it's pronounced. Only a couple of people can ever say it correctly. I take that as a challenge.
I know. I want to say Kat Prima.
It's got to be Primo. Primo.
Primo.
Like Kat like Primo. Like a Primo.
There's no
like
X at Primo. The end.
That's like, still I feel like how you that's
usually
it.
With the X.
Okay. Yeah. Primo. Well,
don't come for me. Let Kat weigh in. Who's right?
Kat
Primo, you're right. It's got the U on the end, right? Primo?
Primo.
Cat Primo.
Are we right, Kat? We must know.
Why don't we just mumble it?
Cat Primo. We got it right. Yeah, that was right. Thanks, Kat. Love you. Next up, we've got June Staxton Waylast. And I'm hoping I got that last name right, June. But thank you so much. I love the name June.
I was just about to say.
June is getting like a new, like coming. Like there's so many little, I know so many little Junes.
I love all the like shorter, like older names, I feel like. Mm-hmm. My grandma was, that was her middle name. She was a Donna June.
Oh, really?
I really like June.
My, I know a couple of little like elementary age June. I wonder if they were like inspired by The Handmaid's Tale.
Isn't that like a really sad show or something?
Yeah,
really
but depressing. It's like really good.
Do you think someone like got their newborn baby and they're like, we're going to name it after this really depressing HBO show?
Yeah, because she's like a fierce like woman.
Oh.
Who's like taking down an entire like dystopian society single-handedly.
Yes.
Yeah.
More of that. More of that energy.
I mean, I couldn't keep watching after season three. It was way too tough, but...
Well, I'm very booked up with Jersey Shore right now, so.
All right, last one.
Last but not least, Abby Andrews.
Abby Andrews, thank you so much. Abby Andrews, and got the nice alliteration there. Abby Andrews.
I know. Abby, do you design like, do you have a cute little stationery store and you're doing like letterpress cards and monogram stationery and it's like,
MoCap is projecting her like little dream job onto you, Abby, right now. So don't feel bad if you don't run a little stationery gig. That's
But Abby, if you do, like
tell her how to do it. Yeah.
I've really been thinking about stationery a lot, so I did definitely project that. But that would be a very great brand. So you should consider it, Abby.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much to MoGab and to the listeners.
Abby Andrews notes for you. How cute is that? Okay. Let me know if you need some more ideas, Abby.
Thank you so much to MoGab and the listeners for listening to this story.
You're welcome.
We love all of you so much. If you would like to support the podcast, you can find us on social media at CreepersPod on Instagram and also the True Crime Creepers discussion group on Facebook. That would be awesome if you could join us in there. It's a lot of fun. You can also find us on Patreon at patreon.com/truecrimecreepers. And make sure you subscribe so that you'll know exactly when our next episode will drop, when I'll tell MoGab another wild story.
Bye, peeps and creeps.